Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Newcastle, England. A 61-year-old man attacked his girlfriend after she didn't help him open his lunch. The lunch was a can of corned beef. Definitely not a Jew.
I want to thank LifeLock for this half of the show. You can go to LifeLock.com. And also MedMen, MedMen.com, TrueCar as well. Thank TrueCar. And Geico. Go to Geico.com. Lise Wheel is here. Good to see you, Lise.
Hey, great to be with you.
Congratulations on yet another book.
Thank you for the applause.
Says author of almost 20 books. I feel like we could have just said 18.
Yeah, why not 18? But thank you. I don't, let's just keep going.
How many books have you written?
18.
Oh.
How did you know?
I like that Dylan's sort of rounding up, but you can just write 18 books. I'll say 18.
Well, you know, the spelling, numbers, you know, it's never anyone's long suit, especially writers.
This one is Hunting Charles Manson. Good news. So Charlie died recently. So
couldn't happen to a nicer guy,
right? What do we need to know about Charles Manson? And it's funny, I have a picture Max Paddock can find of me in a pedal car that is above Spahn Ranch from the 60s. I was born in 64. I must have been 2, maybe 3 in this. So I don't know what years.
That's prime Manson time.
We were renting a house on Jason Spahn Ranch adjacent.
Really?
As a kid. Yeah. And if you ever talk to Bryan Cranston, he'll tell you about, he grew up in the valley too, about like riding a horse like through there. You know, it was just wide open.
Oh, yeah. I was just there. I went to Spahn Ranch, of course, because I do my research. I've been working on this book for nearly 2 years from start to finish. And I went to Spahn Ranch. And now now it's kind of covered in poison ivy, a lot of parts of it. But it's very idyllic. I mean, it's beautiful. I was there in the spring. The birds are doing their tweet thing and the plants are doing their plant thing and it's green. It's gorgeous. To get to the place where Charles Manson strummed his guitar and the women were just swooning over him, and you see these pictures of them all in the rock, you know, these fancy, all these pictures with him, and the women sort of gathered around him. You have to go down through the canyon a little bit. You might have done that as a child. And you really do have to go through poison ivy, which I did. Thank goodness I was wearing long pants. And I sat on the rock where he sat and where some of these pictures are taken. And I'm telling you, because the camera guys wanted me to sit there for this video that we're taking. And they said, well, how does it feel sitting there? Now, this is 49 years later. It'll be 49 years exactly in August. So, I mean, come on. There's nobody actually there from the time, obviously. And I'm telling you, when I said to the guys, I said, it feels creepy. And it does.
Wow. So first, just on the Spahn Ranch, I'll show you the picture of me sitting in the pedal car. And in the background, if you look to the upper right, that is basically that Spahn Ranch
that
area.
That is Natalia Carolla.
Adorable.
That is that face.
Who's the bearded fellow with the knife and the guitar?
It's my neighbor, Charlie. He's a sweetheart.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey.
So
you're so cute.
Enough about me. But that's Spahn Ranch back there.
Yeah.
So it's a Chatsworth, the corner of the valley. Basically, nothing was developed back then.
That's one of the reasons they went there. I mean, they had this guy. There was a ranch there, and what they did. I mean, sorry to interrupt, but
no, tell me.
What they did is they wanted to. They had to have a place to live, right, where Charles Manson could dream up the whole helter skelter idea, and so he basically said, look, to this old rancher dude, Mr. Spahn. He said, look, the girls will sort of take care of the horses and the trails for people coming in that wanted to buy these horses for the day and take trail rides, and we'll make sure that the horses are taken care of, your stalls are taken care of, the, you know, the stuff is taken, the junk is, the crap is taken care of, and we'll keep everything clean. And that's what they did. And then the girls would go out and they would forage for food in nearby grocery stores in the back. And, you know, they would get the food. And that's how they lived. And it was fairly idyllic for a while, until Charles Manson didn't get what he wanted. What he really wanted at the beginning of the days was not just this idyllic sort of spawn ranch life, but he wanted a music deal in Los Angeles with the Beach Boys. And that didn't, you know, pan out so well. And I think that's where his mind was always twisted from a very early age. But I think that's where his mind really got warped.
Isn't it crazy that him and Hitler both failed artists?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Had one thing gone right for them, you know, at a certain point.
You know. But then I think, let's take Hitler outside for
Exactly.
And then I think, to Manson for a thing. Well, yes, maybe if the Beach Boy deal or any deal had gone right for him, because that's one of the reasons that they went to Sharon Tate's house. But okay, let's move that into another box for a second. Then think, okay, well, if that deal had gone right, then maybe the killings never would have happened. And LA culture never would have changed the way it did in that summer night. But you know what? Something else bad would have happened to him, and it still would have happened, right?
If he would have taken that power and popularity.
Exactly. Something else would have happened.
Well, look, it's a two-way street. A lot of people say, hey, if Jimmy Kimmel never met you, maybe he'd never be hosting the Oscars right now. And I go, I got to believe that kid would at least be doing some kind of regional radio.
He would have found his way.
That good or that bad. Something would have happened.
It's a two-way street is what I'm saying.
You can identify.
You know, how come it always comes back to you.
Yeah. Me. Yeah. Okay. Let's focus on me.
What do you think about you?
So now Manson physically enter the La Bianca house?
Because
he didn't enter the Tate house.
You come into my web of my legal lair.
Yes. Did he enter the La Bianca house?
He had at an earlier time. Remember that time in LA, if you could even imagine it, people didn't lock their doors.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe he had, and they had, when the La Biancas, had owned a little boat, and they went away on weekends for little boating things, and they had gone away that weekend, actually, the weekend that they were murdered, on a boating trip. I believe that they had, that Charles Manson had been inside that house at an earlier time, but not the weekend they were murdered. The weekend they were murdered, though, Manson had gone by. They had sussed out that house. They had decided on that house. After, by the way, and I talk about this in the book, after, by the way, they have looked at other places and nixed the other places. A kid, they'd seen pictures of a kid, didn't want to go in there. Manson didn't want to kill a kid.
What?
He had boundaries, apparently.
He had boundaries.
Killed unborn kids.
Didn't want to kill dogs.
What? And Hitler.
You know, yeah. Didn't kill La Bianca's dog.
What?
There were other places they didn't go to.
The La Biancas were grocers, right? Owned some grocery stores.
And she owned a nail place before, I believe it was.
How did they end up at La Bianca? I mean, and was he trying to start a race war? And if so, it seems like a weird mix of households to attack.
Very weird mix. I mean, why go into Sharon Tate's place that she was renting? You know, kind of a little bit of a Hollywood scene, if you will, a little bit of a party place, you know, and kind of the strange mix of characters that were there. Not strange, but, you know, certainly different from La Bianca's, which were much more down to earth, not business, if you will, not show business anyway, LA area. Very different one from the other. Oh, in fact, a little tidbit, Rosemary LaBianca had seen the headlines of what Manson had done before she was killed when they picked up a paper or newspaper. You know, newspapers existed before going into the house that night, and apparently had exclaimed, you know, almost cried, like, how could anybody be so cruel?
How many days before?
This was just a couple of days in between. This was just happening very quickly. In fact, what had happened is Tex Watson and the girls. Tex Watson is the one who actually, you know, did the murder,
yeah.
Actually plunged the knife, had come back and said exactly how it had gone down. And Charles said, you know, it was too messy. We've got to do something different. You got to go back and do something more witchy, but it's got to be different. Mm-hmm. And it was too messy this time. So that's why they went out the second night. But to get back to your question, you asked a question about the motive. Was it helter-skelter or not? A lot of questions about really whether that was the motive, whether he was really setting up this place in the desert to go, because that's the helter-skelter motive, that they were setting up a place in the desert where Charles Manson and his family were going to set up this race war. They were going to blame black people in L.A. because that's the, you know, death to pigs, and it was set up to make it look like this is one and the prevalent theory here.
Weren't the Watts riots just a little bit before that? Because they were kind of playing on
all that, exactly. You've got it being 1969, and it was set up to look like blacks did it. This is setting up a race war. And meanwhile, Charles Manson and his family were going to be waiting all of this out and be in the desert so that they could come back. Manson could come back. They could pretty much take over Los Angeles, take over. I mean, it's a Hitler-esque.
Once the blacks were in charge, I read Helter Skelter when I was in high school.
Yes.
I loved it. It was so granular and got
Vincent
into depth.
Vincent Bugliosi wrote
Helter Skelter,
the prosecutor.
Yes.
The
blacks would take over, but then they couldn't handle the power, and then Charles Manson would rise up. It was bizarre. It was
bizarre, wackadoodle. But of course, this is Charles Manson dreaming all of this up. Where was he dreaming this up? Spahn Ranch. Now, I go into, in the book, I go into alternative theories about really what the motive was. And I talk a lot about it could have just been some nasty drug stuff going down. Could have been that. There's a lot of stuff about that.
Delusions of grandeur.
Oh, my God. You think?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I mean, with the
the drugs. And then this whole thing with Tex Watson, which was fascinating. And with Tex Watson, one of the things, and really the motivating point for me that I when I took it from, you know, I could write a magazine article about this to I'm writing a whole book about this, was going to the last parole hearing of Tex Watson in October of 2016. And I was the only press person that got admittance to that hearing. And sitting there, and I was closer to Tex Watson than I am with you, Adam.
Emotionally or physically?
Physically. Okay. Emotionally, we're still
clarity.
Bonding. We're still bonding.
Understood.
About as close as you and I are, Gina. And for about 9.5-10 hours during that hearing. And the other only – in a room that's about the size of this room, this podcast studio, with three parole hearing officers – and the prosecutor from LA came up, and the victim's family member. So you had Deborah Tate, and you had Kay Martley, Gary Hinman's cousin, and you had the others from the victim's families. And it was so emotionally draining for them.
Of course.
And it was just so. I'm telling you, after that, and listening to him, and looking at him and just feeling just the emanation of just pure evil.
He has not found Jesus Christ.
Oh, to the contrary. I'm sorry.
You're talking
to the contrary. No.
We are emotionally close.
No, he said, I have found Jesus. I've been born again. I have found Jesus. And so one of the victim's family members said at the end, this was great. She said, you know, Mr. Watson, if you have found Jesus, will you, you know, if you have found Christ, will you do what the Christ would want? What Jesus would have want, and keep us from having to appear here again in another 5 years for a parole hearing?
Good answer. Mm-hmm.
I was like,
I have a million thoughts.
Really?
First off, I think he sired four kids.
Yes, four. While he was in prison.
Conjugal. Once he was incarcerated,
he still had four kids.
He wasn't even married. I hope California just breaks off in the ocean and we all drown.
No. I do.
I do. We're horrible.
No, we should have been put to death.
He should have been put to death.
Charles
Manson.
No. Wait a second. They were. There was a death penalty.
Of course, they should have been grandfathered in. They should have been grandfathered in. They got in before they overturned it. They were
correct.
They should have been killed. There's no reason why these families have to make the pilgrimage.
It's insane.
And he shouldn't be having kids. And I don't know what his kids are up to. I imagine they're publicists. But I don't know what they're up to.
And I believe made money. Now, he says, oh, it's, you know, 401c3. And there was no money. Oh, come on.
That's just the fact that we're talking about him. He should have been dead in 1971 and a half. And then we get on with our lives. Hold on. Let me tell you about LifeLock. And then we can keep going on this. It's too the murders are one thing. The siring four kids once you're incarcerated is a much bigger crime, and that's on us, is what I'm saying. LifeLock, the FBI, reports citing internet crime complaints with losses of over $1.4 billion, almost as much as Avatar's made, $1 billion. Top two crimes reported were non-payment, non-delivery, and personal data breaches. Nearly 2,000 complaints were about ransomware. So many threats today. It's digital worlds out there. You need to protect yourself. Good thing LifeLock has identity theft protection. Now includes the power of Norton Security for added protection. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to help protect against identity theft, like your info being on sale on the dark web. Norton helps protect against online threats like ransomware. So let's get some protection here. It's 2018. If there's a problem, their agents will work to fix it, but there won't be because you got LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can stop every cyber threat and prevent all identity theft, but new LifeLock with Norton Security can uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Join now and for the first year, get an additional 10% off the low starting price of $7.99 a month plus applicable taxes. Go to LifeLock.com and enter promo code Adam. That's promo code Adam.
All right. So what give us... I feel like we're all pretty well versed in this case. Give us two or three things that most people just had no idea.
Did you know that the cops just bungled this case absolutely and completely? That LAPD and the sheriff's office were so
incompetent.
Thank you. I'm searching for.
I'll say
nice
it. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay, you said it. But I will.
I always assume
that is a beautiful word. They had. Well, let's talk about today too. But anyway, they have these fiefdoms, and again, there's another reason I want to write this book, and they're because they have these fiefdoms. They have this jurisdictional. We're not going to talk about one case from the other because Gary Hinman. He's lesser known, and this is again another reason I wanted to write this book. His lovely cousin Kay Martley is still alive, and she was at the hearing that I went to, the Tex Watson hearing. Wonderful woman. I got very close to her, actually. I stay in touch with her. I know about her grandkids getting married. I mean, you know, Kay, if you're out there listening, hi. Gary's case was really not talked about all that much, but he was killed in a very brutal way. They tortured him for several days. Charles Manson cut off his ear and left him to die.
Spahn Ranch?
No, this is at his house. In fact, I went to Gary Hinman's house. It's different, you know, it's obviously different now, 49 years later, but it's in Los Angeles area. Anyway, they killed him for, Charles Manson thought he'd come into some kind of inheritance, come into
$20,000. Right.
When he said to Charles, I haven't got anything. I got a couple piddly old cars out here. Here's the titles to my cars. Take anything here.
Is this after the Tate LaBianca? No, it's before.
This happened all before. So this led up to what Charles Manson then did but it was lesser known.
Right.
My point is they had clues from Gary Hinman, right? It was done in the same way because they were leading up to these other brutal murders. When then Tate happened, Death to pigs, the blood and all that. You kind of think that that might match up to what happened with the same sort of clues with the LaBiancos. But because the fiefdoms, the war of, I'm macho, I'm not going to share clues with the other LAPD, the LAPD and the LA sheriffs, they didn't catch this guy for they were running around doing stuff they shouldn't have been able to do. And yeah. But my point is, in a roundabout way, is that we see this kind of thing happening, not just in 1969. We saw it in 9/11 when the FBI wasn't talking to the CIA. We see that time and time again. I'm a third generation federal prosecutor. My granddad was one before me. My dad was one before I, and I'm very proud of it. My dad was an FBI agent. I'm an FBI brat, traveled around the country as a girl, with my dad as an FBI agent. And I know it happens, and it still happens, that law enforcement doesn't talk to each other because they're so darn worried about their little fiefdoms. And people suffer because of it. And one of the reasons I wanted to write this book is to show another example in history where people suffer because that happens.
I agree. First off, every one of those first 48 shows or any one of those cop shows where they solve a crime.
That's right.
So it's, well, it went cold. And so we were just sitting, we were eating Panda Express and the phone rang.
Yep.
And it was a woman who was sitting at a bar next to a guy and overheard a conversation. Like every single crime that gets solved is 18 months later, their phone rings.
Yep.
And it's the ex-girlfriend of one of the guys. And it's like, I don't know if that's crime solving or
you
answering.
You take credit for that.
You're answering the phone.
But call different jurisdictions because they're so worried about who gets credit.
Yeah. See,
that's the problem. Who gets the plaque on the wall. I'm not kidding. It's a big deal to get a plaque, to get credit, to get that honor, you know. And if you just shared more information and weren't so worried about who was going to get the presentation at your next award ceremony, you might solve the crimes a lot faster.
More information, less presentation.
Ooh, that's
always
good.
Said
oh, I
that.
Love that.
Put
can
that
I use
on a plaque,
that?
Bitch. I mean, not you.
No. Please.
I mean, the guy in his office.
Was this part of the problem with how long it took to catch the Golden State Killer? I had heard same,
you know,
similar things about
that's
this.
That's exactly the kind of thing. I don't know 100%, but I wouldn't
sounds
doubt
very familiar.
That exactly the kind of thing. And it sort
oh,
of
that
exactly.
was a family member turning him in?
And well, that was DNA was involved.
That,
and that,
I think that was like an OBGYN exam DNA. Like that was another thing that came out.
But
right.
Somebody turned him in like a family member,
I think they
right?
Found-
There was a DNA match.
That was a DNA match.
DNA
match. That came years later. Yeah. That
but, who,
was, but this has
but
been 30,
was
30 40 years.
Blatant.
Yeah.
But who found that DNA or how'd that hold work? On. Well, oh, yeah, I know it was a DNA thing, but I thought there was some inside job. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, the point here was it was so blatant and you know, as bad a job though as
oh
if law
somebody
enforcement
went and got
did,
their DNA
right.
they went they got their
one
family
of those tests right
law enforcement
right.
uploaded his DNA to the site
right,
and
right. That's what happened
as
right.
bad a job as law enforcement did oh you were oh this is gets back to a point you were trying to make Adam as bad a job as law enforcement did in catching him. Bugliosi, the prosecutor that later wrote Helter Skelter, did a brilliant job in prosecuting him, especially because Manson did not actually plunge the knife into anyone. We were talking about conspiracy before we had things like RICO. Mm-hmm. RICO, as you know, is usually used in drug cases now, but it can also be used in murder cases, like things like that, to bring in co-conspirators into an act. And it's, now we talk about RICO, Schmicko, and it's like, oh, of course you can bring in RICO co-conspirators in. Didn't have RICO then. So Vincent Bugliosi, even though we consider and say, well, of course it was easy to convict Manson. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was groundbreaking to say, because Manson, who defended
himself. He didn't commit the crime.
Right? He didn't actually wield the knife. He wasn't even there, as you pointed out so well.
Yeah.
He wasn't even there. So they had to convince, Bugliosi had to convince the jury that by setting it in motion, by saying go out and do something witchy, by having Tex Watson actually teach the quote unquote girls how to put that knife in and how to twist it to how to kill somebody and twist it to really gut them, how to do all of those things, and by setting it into motion and taking them there and doing all of that, he was as guilty as if he were there and if he had plunged the knife himself. Oh. That's how he got the conviction, and it was groundbreaking.
Tex is how old now?
In his 70s. That was the other thing that was so – you'll love this, Adam. That was the other thing that got the victim so up in arms about that parole hearing. He was over 70 years old, right? Mm-hmm. He'd been there for X number of years, more than 25. He was under 25 when he committed the murders. You have something called the Elder Parole Act here in California, which mandates that under those circumstances, people be let go.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the beginning of this parole hearing, none of those people, those victims, would talk to me. In fact, I sat outside. It was sort of like being outside of a party. And you heard all of the – because the victims had a victim's advocate. And I was outside, you know, locked it outside, and the warden was very nice. It's a maximum security prison. And, you know, I just sat there with my little pen and paper, no phone or anything like that. And I heard inside the victim's rooms this. No, 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 no. Ew, I'm making up sounds. But they're being polled, and they're asking, would you want to speak to a member of the press? That was me. No mm-hmm. one wanted to speak with me. Inside, I had my mole in there, Kay, who was like, you know, shooting. But even at the beginning, she kind of had to, like, pretend not to be for lease, you know. But by the middle of it, Kay helped get them turned around, not because I'm such a nice, likable person, which I hope you guys think I am, but because she said to them, look, Lise knows the law. She knows about Elder Parole Act. She can help talk you guys through it and help you with your allocution, your statements mm-hmm. to the parole, because they were all worried, I'm telling you, that Tex Watson, this gruesome murderer, might actually be let go under your guys' law.
My feeling with the capital punishment stuff is like when people go, oh, that makes you as bad as them. It's like, no.
No,
this
you
is us just
go.
Taking an animal and putting him down. And mainly, it's not only that, it's like the books, the conjugal visits, the right. children they sire, all these
the parole
meetings, yeah. all the stuff that we have yeah. to deal with, the fact that we even remember
in.
Their name. Yeah. We should all just go straight Tim McVeigh with everybody. It's just Tim McVeigh, gone. Hold on.
I got to tell you something about remembering your name. Okay.
About who?
About remembering their names.
Hold on. Oh, first, okay, let me tell you. About MedMen, redefining the cannabis industry by empowering you to exercise your right to purchase cannabis, premium shopping experience, wide range of products with knowledgeable and approachable staff. You can find what is best for you. Gina, how are you doing, man?
Yeah, if you're going to go ahead and listen to this show and then go grab a copy of Helter Skelter, you're going to need to take the edge off. And I highly recommend you go over to MedMen and talk to them, because they will tell you about all the different strains. They're so knowledgeable. They're like teachers, state-of-the-art facility. I've had really wonderful experiences there.
Now through the 30th, June 30th, I got a huge sale. Favorite brands like Bloom, Papa, and Barkley, Triple J, 40% off, plus $10 off if you mention me. Highest quality and safety. Don't worry about what you're buying. Check out one of their 8 locations, L.A., Orange County, San Diego, Las Vegas, MedMen.com. Find the nearest store to you at MedMen.com. Dawson.
Plus, visit MedMen and tell him you heard about them on the Adam Carolla Show podcast. For $10 off your order, in addition to the 40% off select items, check out MedMen today.
All right, so at least you're going to say names.
Oh, you said reading names, and that made me think about when I was in this hearing with Tex Watson, the man that actually did the killings. When he came to saying sorry to the parole officers, like trying to get out under mm-hmm. Elder Parole Act in California, he had to look down at his, not even kidding you, at his handwritten notes when it came to listing off and reading the names of the victims that he had killed. And as Deborah Tate, Sharon's sister, said to me after the hearing, you'd think after all that time in prison, he might remember the names mm-hmm. of the people that he had killed. I mean, it was just astounding to me.
Well, I think that this, he's a bad guy.
Yeah, I guess
decorum
you're right.
is probably
yes.
not yeah. at the top of
nah,
his.
I know. I just
shopping
unbelievable.
List.
It is unbelievable. But you asked about other things that that you know
people
that
might not
people
know.
People might not know. I think one of the other things that people might not think about. They may think no, but they don't think about necessarily. Is we think about Manson. Yes, he died. You know, I don't know. Don't rest his soul, God. Not rest his soul. Good riddance. But you think about him being so long ago and spooky, but yes, so long ago. Then think about Keith Raniere and the sex cult that is, mm-hmm. you know, he and Allison Mack and all of that. They're just awaiting trial right now. The Manson-esque playbook is alive and well.
Sure.
And we need to think about that, I believe, lest history repeat itself. I mean,
with the recruiting.
Exactly.
And the, yeah.
Thank you. Because you think about, you know, it's not just, you know, wayward runaway girls that were part of the girls in Manson's family. You had, you know, Deirdre Shaw, who was Angela Lansbury's daughter, Angela Lansbury, you know, Murder, She Wrote,
sure.
daughter who was in the periphery of this. I mean, you had, you know, these are women and girls from all over, all economic status, just like you have now. So this idea of luring girls in with, you know, come to us, you know, be free of things that people that don't, you know, parents that don't understand you, be part of a commune, be accepted, be loved. That was all Charles Manson. It's what we're hearing now, what's coming out with Keith Raniere and the cult that I can't even pronounce.
Nexium,
whatever. Yeah, exactly. It's the same sort of thing. So we need to remember that.
Hunting,
just go away.
Hunting Charles Manson's the name of the book. Are you able to talk about O'Reilly?
No.
I did not know you were involved with that situation, but there is no discussion of that.
No.
All right. I accept that as an answer. It's my job as a podcaster to ask.
Of course.
Well, you guys can do your own research on that. I'll leave Lise alone on that. All right, Lise, the movie, or I should say the book,
no,
but maybe
yes,
it'll get turned into a movie.
A movie, from your lips to God's ears.
Hunting
yes.
Charles Manson, The Quest for Justice in the Days of Helter Skelter. It is available as we speak. And again, just bookmark us and click through Amazon and go pick it up. And your website, it is LISWIEHLbooks.com, and you can get more information there. We will bid adieu to Lise, and we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
All right. What do we got, Gina Grad?
Well, on the tip of prison and all of this crazy prison reform, President Trump has pardoned Alice Marie Johnson, currently serving a life sentence for a nonviolent drug offense. This was the woman that Kim Kardashian went to the White House about to sort of speak in her favor. Taken freeing Johnson as a personal challenge, and he pardoned her. The pardon is part of a broader effort led by Kushner to highlight the issue of prison reform, particularly focused on nonviolent offenders. Johnson was convicted and sentenced to life without parole in 1996 for her role in facilitating communications in a cocaine trafficking operation in Memphis, Tennessee. And I believe at the time she was a grandparent. You know, she was in the early 60s or so.
So this is one of those good social media stories,
absolutely.
Right? Somebody ran down Kim Kardashian via this, social media.
Yep.
She got involved.
Yep. This was a video that went viral. It got her ear, and she did it. She did something about
you
it.
You will see a lot more of this.
This would be
a lot
amazing.
More of this.
Good. We've talked about it for a million years. We just don't want non-dangerous people incarcerated. So let's get the folks that aren't hurting other people out of there. And look, if they have a debt to pay, let them literally pay their debt.
Right.
But why are we paying to lock them up? And let's get some cells open for the crazy people who stab people in the neck with number two pencils.
Right. And, you know, speaking of prison, on the way over here, I was listening to Brian Suits on KFI, and we're talking about, remember that just disgusting, those fucking monsters, the mom and the stepdad who tortured that little boy to death, their son, and now they've both been charged and they're in prison forever.
Yes.
But she took a plea deal to avoid the death penalty, and he didn't. And Brian Suits says that's the smartest thing he could have done. Because in California, he's never going to die, you know, not on our watch, not by us. So if he gets to go to a cell by himself on death row and be left alone and not put in general population where he would not fare well knowing what he did to this little boy, that was probably smart of him. Because we're not going to kill him.
Again, it's not evolved to me to not kill people that don't deserve to be killed. I'll take it as if it's a war. Does anyone have an issue with killing Nazis or killing soldiers when we're Battle of the Bulge or whatever? We're going island hopping and trying to get to the Japanese mainland. Like people die. And these are little individual soldiers who think it's a good idea to torture, rape, kill, whatever, leave for dead, dismember, whatever. And in a war, there'd be thousands of them killed, and now we'll just kill them one at a time. They made the decision when they decided to torture a three-year-old to the point where they killed them. I mean, this story is like, oh, he showed up with broken ribs, and then he showed up with a crushed orbital socket. The guy's an animal.
Yeah.
Kill him, and kill him like you put an animal down. Like, you literally got rabies. Like, do it for...
He's a danger to the neighborhood.
Do it for his own good and for everyone's own good. And let's get... And I don't know why California... We pretend like we love everybody. We have homeless people just flopping on the sidewalk all day, living in their own filth. Like, look, put them down. Moving on. It drives me nuts. Mike Farrell, blow me. He doesn't like these things. That's just these fucking heroes. They're like, hey, no, everybody's human. Fuck you. There are animals out there that deserve to die. Stop fucking preaching all the time. Nobody's an animal. Yes, when you torture your three-year-old son to death, you are a fucking animal who needs to be died. Huck, here's a question. Mike Farrell, who's world-class pussy from MASH. He's a spearhead. Him and Mike Moore and all guys named Mike, they're all the fucking tip of the spear of all, we're better than you, we're more evolved than you. All right, here's your choice. Here's your choice. Mike Farrell, if you're fucking listening, your fucking sideburns, your fucking daisies you're putting in the barrels of the National Guard. You get a choice, one choice only. This guy who tortured and beat his, I don't know, four-year-old to death over a period of, you know, probably 6 months or a year. Here's your choice, Mike Farrell, and all your other fucking pussies who don't want the death penalty. If I had a magic wand and we could kill this guy before he tortured and eventually killed his son or Tex Watson or whoever, would you wave that magic wand and then kill that person before they did this? Would you do that? If you have a shred of dignity and authenticity, you would have to say yes. Okay. So now that we've agreed that this person can die and should die before they then did what Tex did to the Tate and LaBianca family, then I'm simply going to do it after they tortured and killed everybody. How's about that? And is there a big difference?
No.
Okay. Well, good. And this thing where it goes, it makes us as bad as them. That's like saying, killing bin Laden makes us as bad as bin Laden. No, that's not how it works.
It sounds good. But it doesn't work that way.
I'd be fine with all these fucking guys if they were dead. All right, anyway, be nice to this guy. I bet California, we're just going to pay a premium to keep this guy incarcerated. And look, maybe he'll get to sire a few more kids like Tex and turn the page and start a new family.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome.
Well, ESPN reports that the Philadelphia 76ers have accepted the resignation of President of Basketball Operations Brian Colangelo, effective immediately. Here's why. Sixers coach Brett Brown will oversee the basketball operations in interim. But the move comes after a story by The Ringer brought to light the possibility that Colangelo had multiple anonymous Twitter accounts that were used to prop himself up and criticize former players and current players on Bill the 76ers. Colangelo had discussed with ownership and upper management the possibility that his wife, Barbara Bettini,
let's just say someone close to me,
may have been involved in the postings of the tweets from so-called burner accounts.
Oh my God, was his wife?
Well, when interviewed,
what were the tweets?
They were basically propping him up, making him look like a hero, criticizing current and former 76ers players. I have examples.
It was a real death dog situation.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh.
That's why I'm bringing this up.
People
who may have gone on the podcast later, we had a situation in 2006 on the podcast where someone on the inside was posting things on, I believe it was on our message boards that we actually hosted.
Really stir things up.
Very critical. Very critical. Yeah.
So what is a burner Twitter account? You start up a Twitter account. You say a few good things about your husband, and then you bounce it out.
It's under a fake name, and the accounts were very critical of players on the Sixers, of course, their own players, certain things that wouldn't have looked too good coming out of Brian Colangelo's.
Well, and not just that, but things that no one else could have known.
Yeah,
there was a lot of training, things that went on during practice.
I'm in love with this guy's wife.
That'd be
Stand
amazing
by your
if
man.
It was his wife.
Well, when interviewed, Bettini, the wife, admitted establishing and operating accounts, and forensic evidence corroborated her admissions. However, the investigation also revealed substantial evidence that, like I said, Colangelo was the source of all of this stuff, non-public, sensitive, club-related info. There was no way anyone else could have known it.
Hmm.
So, maybe working together a little bit. She might be a little younger, maybe a little more tech savvy.
Yeah, but you also tell your spouse or certain other things about work, like, at work, this guy did this or this person did this or whatever said this. So I could see how she could take that and run with it a little bit. It would make sense.
You'd let her take the fall.
Let me contrast that to my relationship. You guys went to In-N-Out? Yeah. Did you bring me anything? We didn't know if you were hungry.
No.
Could have called. Yeah, I guess.
Anyway,
Sonny wants two burgers, so... I like this woman.
Yeah. She's a team player.
That's right.
Yeah.
Team Colangelo.
Yeah. Nice. I guess everything's grounds for dismissal these days.
Yeah,
can
he's
he
out.
Catch on with another team? Or?
Maybe Ryan knows.
He's a basketball lifer. His dad was an executive and a coach.
Mm-hmm. Letting him go, I'd go, good news, I passed your resume and a recommendation on to the Milwaukee Benedict Arnolds!
Is that a CBA team?
They don't use that reference enough.
You don't hear that much anymore.
No.
Yeah, they don't.
Went down with the life of Riley.
Let me tell you about True Car. Car tips you may not know. How about the one where you put the key fob under your chin to increase its range? Here's another tip. True Car also helps people get used cars with certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million. Used cars. Enjoy real pricing on actual inventory. A simpler buying experience, whether you're buying new or buying used. You see what other people pay. You get your price, you lock in, you get your deal, and you enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers who, by the way, are competing for your business. So when you're ready to buy new or you want to go used, you always go with True Car, and you enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states, but I bet you don't live in one of those states, so let's go with True Car. All right, let's do one more.
Okay, well, this is definitely something that, and I think, Brian, you'll agree, this is really just more of a commercial for a product than a news story.
Let's
The International House of Pancakes, a.k.a. IHOP, has announced that it's changing its name. It's no longer IHOP. It's going to be IHOB with a B. The company tweeted and posted this on Facebook, and they won't say what the B stands for. They're going to make a big announcement the next few days. They tweeted, quote,
if it's not breakfast, I'm going to lose my mind.
What could it be?
For 60 pancaking years, we've been IHOP. Now we're flipping our name to IHOB. Find out what it could be on 6/11/18.
What could it be?
The company didn't release any information. There's 1,800 restaurants, and it's a big to-do.
God, that was the greatest 50 minutes of my life would be once a year going into that place with like our neighbors, the Gravitches in North Hollywood, and having the syrup go around
and
getting the stacks and the stuff. It was just, such a crazy treat that my kids will never really care about or experience, but that notion of just getting that.
Daddy, can we go to IHOP?
IHOP sounded good to me. I don't know what happened to IHOP.
I'm with Brian. If it's not breakfast, I'll be very confused. Where,
nothing up is down. Down is up.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more.
Okay.
Speaking of 2006, speaking of the radio show, do you remember going to IHOP after the morning show once in a while? And Damashek, I'm going to get the Migas. I'm going to get the Migas.
Migas?
Yeah.
I'm going to give her the signal. He can put his three fingers down like an M and put it right on his forearm. I'm going to give her the signal for the Migas. It's like, all right, Dave. We get there. It's like, well, sir, what'll you have? And he just like this. Does gives her the signal.
Three
and she goes, what is that?
Yeah.
What's a Migas?
What are you doing?
It's like eggs and scrambled with like tortilla chips and chorizo or something. Onion, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Give me the Migas.
Amazing. Well, you'll like this. And I wonder, Adam, if you would drink it. Something tells me you'd at least try it. Esquire reports that a Swedish brewery, along with the Swedish environmental lobby, has launched a new pilsner that is brewed with wastewater. The beer is called Purist. It's a result of several attempts to raise awareness for sustainable safe drinking water. Brewmaster Chris Thurgeson says, quote, "We share the view that both producers and consumers must dare to think differently if we are to successfully take care of the Earth's resources. The beer is only available in Sweden right now, but could go global."
You can get it here. It's called Miller Lite.
Oh! Yeah, I was going to say, would they even allow this into the United States if it is made with wastewater?
I imagine it's
treated.
Sure, it's treated. One would hope it's treated. I don't have any problem with anything that passes through a HEPA filter. Right. Once everything's treated, it's just treated, and I'm fine with it. I don't need the novelty of it.
Gotta create the buzz.
But that's fine. And speaking of buzz, if you can catch one, like, I'm all for it. And also, this is the one. Because I feel like you'd just drink one, you'd catch a little buzz, and then you could get on with your life. This is a Swedish company.
Yeah.
I'm into the environmental thing. I don't think this is quite going to fix the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do love when I hear about what these guys are doing, and I love that we have problems that we don't think we can solve. Because the problem is, let's say, it's 1975, and the problem is what's coming out of the exhaust pipe of everyone's GM product. And what we do is we fast forward 50 years or 40 years or 25 years, and we still have the same exhaust pipe with the same thing coming out of it. But what we don't do is we don't allow for the advances technologically that can solve the problem. We just go, if this stuff keeps coming out of these tailpipes in 50 years, we're all going to be living underground. But what we don't understand is that what's coming out of a tailpipe 20 years from now will be dramatically different from that. And we never really do the technology part. And I love it when the technology solves a problem.
Right.
And especially it has to do with Earth or pollution or whatever. And if you just think about a lot of you guys are too young to realize that when somebody fired up their car in an underground parking structure or, God forbid, the garage or anything, and you were standing in that garage, your eyes were watering.
Yeah.
You got lightheaded. And now just think about the smell of an underground parking structure that you walked into in the 80s with all the 70s
gaseous
or whatever. It's like, you're like, oh my God, I feel sorry for whoever works here. And what it smells like now, which is
nothing,
kind of a zero. All right. And what we do is we go, cars are bad. And it's like, cars aren't bad. What's coming out of the exhaust pipe in 1975 is bad. Mm-hmm. If we can get it to what's coming out of the exhaust pipe in 2018, then cars not bad anymore.
Right.
And we have to kind of think that way about everything. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
No, 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 no.
Gina, Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Sounds a lot like what I hear at the bar on blowjob night.
No, 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 no.
Okay. I'm just going to order a basket of fries and sit over here and let you guys all rethink your answers,
No.
I only asked once.
I don't even know why they call it blowjob night with that kind of response. I want my cover back.
No, 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 no.
Let me tell you something you shouldn't say no to. Geico, everybody's got the to-do list. How about you add, save a bunch of money on your auto insurance at Geico? That's right. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to drop anything off. You don't have to pick anything up. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Extra money in your pocket. It'll be the most rewarding thing you do all day. That is Geico. That is geico.com. Yeah, one show, the Aladdin. First show sold out. Second show, a couple tickets available. And we'll see you tomorrow night over there and say hi to Nate and August. Everyone will all be there filming a live comedy special. Also, we're going to be playing at the Ice House and the Seattle Moore Theater and Thousand Oaks Borderline. Go to adamcarolla.com and find out where we're going to be. We'll say hi to you there. And podcast1.com/my survey. Go there, take the survey, podcast1.com. Click on the survey banner. It's good juju, man. They do a lot. They give it to you for free. Help them out. Let them know where they can improve. And chassis. Let's get uppity, man. Pre-order it. It just helps us make all the rest of the docs, and it is fantastic. It'll be out in July, so check that out. So, till next time. Adam Carolla for Lee Sweel, Gina Grad, and Bald Ryan saying mahalo. $1,500 to $100,000.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on the Twitter at Adam Carolla. And give him a thumbs up on Facebook. Subscribe to Take an E for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at adamcarolla.com. If you want to leave us a message, it's 888-634-1744. We'll see you in Portland tomorrow night. Some tickets left for the second show, so get yours. Let's sell them both out at adamcarolla.com.